You can have all the Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio podcast with our new app. Just search your app store, Apple, Android, Kindle. We don't care what you use. Search the app store for Explorations Early Learning. Download the app. Give it a try.
It's time to lean back and buckle in. This ain't your grandma's early learning podcast. Then again, your grandma probably didn't know what a podcast was. Hey, moms and dads, puppies and kittens, caregivers and advocates, it's time for Shaking Bones. Here's Dan and Amy.
Hi there. Welcome to the Shaking Bones podcast. I'm Dan Hodgins.
And I'm Amy Avila.
In this episode, Amy and I are going to talk about what's not relevance. Sometimes, Amy and I are hanging out together to tackle the untouchables. Sometimes we might challenge your beliefs, maybe even stretch your comfort zone. But most importantly, we want to make you think. We don't expect agreement or disagreement, but what we do hope is to cause some shaken bones. Amy, one of the things that I hear often is the whole concept of what's appropriate developmentally for children and what's not appropriate. And I worry a lot about the wasted time. David Elkind, in his Hurry Child book, says that teachers spend 71% of their time during the day with information that's not relevant to children that they're serving. 71%. Almost three-fourths of their day is spent with crap, essentially, that's going to be pruned. I really worry about that kind of statistic that we need to carefully look at in terms of what we're trying to get children to understand and learn in that process, don't you?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I didn't realize that that was that percentage was so high. I mean, I knew there was a lot of stuff out there, but that is a, wow, that's a lot of time.
Yeah, when you read it, I had to read it twice. Oh, it can't be. It said 71%. You know, I keep thinking that when I think back on my own school experience, there's certain things that I recall and certain things that I pruned right away in terms of that process. And the things that seemed to be relevant to me were things that were fun, that were motivating, that were real, that were active. And those things remain with me, even at 68. They remain with me. The other stuff I pretty much have put to the side and might recall it occasionally, but it's certainly not something that I find useful in terms of that process. Have you ever thought about that in terms of your own education?
Oh, I think about it all the time because I'm a homeschooler now. You know, I'm homeschooling my son. So in terms of trying to choose what information we want to present him with and what curriculum or, you know, what pieces of curriculum do we want to use? How do we want to integrate and make sure that his education is going to, you know, meet his needs, but then also, you know, meet expectations for him where he's at as well. And so, you know, I'm thinking about that all the time. And I think about all of the things that I don't remember that I have to figure out again to try to teach him at different points in time and, you know, looking for resources and different things. And there are a lot of things that, you know, I've forgotten. And, you know, I'll use an example right now. You know, we've been working on math and I'm really good at math and I always have been, but I don't really like it. And so, you know, we're going through and my husband was taught math a very different way than I was taught math. And the curriculum we're using is a very hands-on curriculum, which has been awesome for my son because, you know, it's awesome for anybody to have it hands-on so you can see exactly what these abstract concepts are. You know, he's had building blocks with him all the way through, and he's in pre-algebra right now, and some of his math includes building blocks and different things, which is really good because then you can see what you're doing and understand it better. But I think about, like, when I was young and in math, you know, it was like we had to remember all of our facts and different things because we were told we weren't going to be carrying a calculator around with us everywhere. Well, you know what? almost all of us are walking around with smartphones and have not only a calculator, but access to Google and, anybody we're connected to who might be an expert in the field that we can text, or, we can reach people so easily, and we have so much information at our fingertips that when we're looking at what children really need to know and what's really relevant right now is really different from what it used to be.
Oh, definitely. I found out that I had 4 years of French. And again, not that I'm opposed to foreign language, because I think that language opportunities, but then we need to give exposure to children so that they can use the language, because I can do parlez-vous français, but don't answer back because I have nothing else to do. And I've 4 years of it. So what I want to do is go through and talk about some of the things that people do that I think are probably not relevant, like the calendar. And I'm always indicating that unless the child has meetings to go to, there is re really no purpose for a calendar in that process of what is relevant and what is not. What do you think about the calendar component?
All they want to know is how many days until their birthday, or when, or if they're going to get to go to do something fun. Their concept of time is so abstract that it's just not really appropriate. And when the time comes for them to start to understand that, if we wait until they're ready and they're ready to understand that and developmentally they're at it, the amount of time we spend on it is so minimal because they get it just like
Exactly.
that. Whereas when we're trying to do it before they're ready, you're doing it over and over and over again, and you're wasting 71% of your time over and over again because they're not ready, and it's just going right out the window.
Right, and it would be more real to say, what do I wear outside today? Because they're so present tense, versus what's the weather going to be like tomorrow? What was it like yesterday? Where did we go yesterday? That kind of thing, because like you indicated, the time concept's so difficult. So, but present tense is what they're interested in. Let's keep something real in terms of the component of what they're doing.
Right,
Shapes. Yeah,
and
go ahead, go ahead.
one more thing on the calendar. Everything happened yesterday. Even if it was 3 years ago, it happened yesterday. So it's just, where that's their past. Anything that happened in the past was yesterday. So.
Exactly, and it's no longer relevant in most cases in terms of that process. And
Right.
if it is, you will add to it or change it, but they won't remember or even care about what the date or month is. I could not tell you what today's date is, but I know that my calendar popped up to say that I'm going to be with Amy at 6:30 tonight. That kind of thing. And that's what's relevant to me. So then I want to talk about the shapes, because I keep saying, what the hell is a shape and why would we use shapes? Because there seems to be such a focus on circles and triangles, and those, and that doesn't mean that if a child's not interested or it is interested in that there would be experiences, but the whole, we spend a lot of time, it seems, on the concept of shapes, and I don't quite get that. Do you comprehend why we're spending so much time on shapes?
All I can think of is it must be a push down for geometry.
Yeah.
You know what I
Yeah,
mean?
which
That,
I
that's
could
the only thing that comes to mind.
Yeah. It's just, and again, it's not that they're not exposed to shapes because they've got blocks of different, sizes and shapes, but I don't go stand around and saying, what shape are you building with today? It's just, I wouldn't do that to even construction workers, so why would I do it to children? So it's one of those concepts that I think would be pruned quite readily, at least I did in terms of that process. Then I wondered about colors, the whole concept of colors. Can I make it through life without really knowing my colors? What do you think?
I'm sure you could. And the thing is really when we look at colors and we think about, if you want to get more scientific about it, everybody's perception of color is just a little bit different. So, and then if you buy a box of crayons now and you get the big box, they've named how many different colors?
Oh
So
my God, I couldn't
it's
believe it. The other day I looked, those colors didn't exist when I was a child.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure they existed, they just weren't in the box.
Right. And if you give children just the primary colors of paint and you let them mix up their own colors, there's an infinite number of combinations that they can come up with. And you know, they can name their own colors too. So
Right. There's some people who have like a blue day and a red day and a green day, and I'm thinking, how does that fit with the rest of the world? Because colors are more integrated rather than isolated. Plus, what if you don't like red or you don't like blue? Then you're stuck with that color as a child, with the whole day in terms of that process. So I think that, looking at colors in a more integrated fashion and in a more present day fashion, I'm always saying that I would probably, if I didn't have someone teaching me my colors when I were young, I probably would still know red, yellow, and green because a police officer is probably going to help me with those three colors, right?
Right. And
And that's real relevant too.
you know, we're not real direct about teaching colors here, but the children know all of the basic colors before they go off to school because it's in their environment. And you know, they all of the paper, all of the paint, all of the markers and crayons are all at their level where they can grab them themselves. And you know, that they talk about it. We talk about the colors of, oh, I really like this one. Oh, you really like red, you know, and that's all it takes is like, yeah, I like this one, so I know what this color is now. It's not a direct, we're having a red day or we're doing all things red or that type of thing. It just comes up in natural conversation when they want to do a project or they're, you know, doing something. So it doesn't have to be a direct teaching. It just has to be something, you know, if it's something that children are interested in, and this happens with all kinds of things that people are intentional about trying to let children know about, but especially the things that they didn't really want children to hook on to, if it's something they're interested in, all they have to hear it is once. And then, you know, then it sticks with them forever.
I agree. I keep thinking about a child who kept coming up to me and saying, "You have the same color shoes that I do," and they were a little bit different in terms of tone. And I put my shoe up against that child's shoe, and the child would say, "Yeah, but yours is a lot bigger." And again, I'm thinking these are real experiences where children are making comparisons, looking at color. Sameness and difference, and all those components, like you said, in a real natural way, which is going to be much more meaningful than having a red day or a blue day in isolation in terms of that process. It's like when children paint and they mix the colors, they discover what other colors are being made again, in different shapes in that process. And it doesn't mean that colors and shapes and that are not part of what we do, but we look at how we make it part of our everyday real experiences for them.
Right. And again, it's not, you don't necessarily have to do that direct instruction for any of it. You know, you don't need that for any of it. And I know there's, you know, because I've seen a lot of the checklists. There are so many, you know, checklists that your child needs to know before kindergarten or, you know, all of the different things. And parents get so worried and hung up about all of these things. But if you give children an opportunity to play and you give them access to materials, it's so natural to meet so many of those check boxes that you don't have to go through and sit down and okay, we're going to learn shapes today, because that's not important or relevant to the child, so you're wasting your time.
I agree. I agree. What about numbers? I always say that the most important number is their age, and they all want to be five. That magical age for some reason where they think, "Oh, I'm going to be five." Some kids even lie and say, "I'm five," and I know they're not five. They want to be five so bad. But we spend a lot of time on numbers in terms of that component. Do you see that also?
Yes, definitely. And you know, and just rote counting without any understanding of what that number actually means. So, you know, how high can the child count? Well, the child might be able to count to 100, but have absolutely no clue what any of that means. They just know that this word comes after that word.
I've had parents come in to me and say, you can count to 100. Count to 100 for Dan. I'm thinking, no, I don't want to listen to this. But again, you're right. In terms of that process, they think that a child who simply does it by rote understands the concept of numbers. But again, I find that numbers, like you had indicated with the others, are one of those natural experiences where people will say, you know, children will say, I need a screwdriver, and they're trying to unscrew something and they want some help. And I said, well, it looks like you need more than one. How many do you need in terms of that would be a real natural, real experience, or when they're passing out cups or plates or things of that sort. It doesn't mean that numbers are not exposed to children, but it, again, it's how we do it. And rather than sit down and do today is we're going to deal with the number two, so we're only going to serve two Cheerios or whatever, is not a natural process for them.
Yeah, definitely not. And, you know, again, that whole, if we wait until the child is ready, a lot of these concepts, you know, it's not going to take long for them to pick up on it. And I think in our country, we have a lot of expectations on very young children, because of the, as I mentioned previously, I think a lot of it has to do with the pushdown that keeps happening, that we think if we teach them earlier and earlier, we're going to get them further ahead. When in reality, when we're trying to push more and more early and earlier, we're wasting more and more of our time and energy, because it's taking us so much longer for children to understand things that they're not ready to understand yet. Whereas, you know, some other places in the rest of the world allow children to play and experience and, you know, get to dabble with all of these things without really, sometimes really knowing what they're doing yet, because they're just experiencing and having exposure to it. But then when the time comes to, you know, get the greater understanding, it's so fast.
Yeah. Yeah. It does seem like a lot of other countries are, don't push the cognitive skills that we just mentioned until after the age of seven. But here we do seem to be pushing down the curriculum. I was talking with a group of teachers the other day, and they were kindergarten teachers, and they were indicating that they no longer teach a kindergarten curriculum. It's really a first and second grade curriculum. So not only is it challenging for the teacher, but it's also really challenging for the child who has to learn that material and then keep relearning it because they prune it because they don't know how or want to apply it in terms of that process. The other thing that I often hear people talk about is the whole manners issue in terms of teaching kids to say please and thank you, looking at wiping your mouth when it's got food on it, those kinds of things. And there are some curriculums out there that people can actually purchase that relate to teaching kids how to be more mannerly. And I'm always concerned about what does that mean to be more mannerly, because it would depend on an individual's interpretation, correct?
Right. And what, you know, what is the expectation of the situation? Because, again, those social expectations, which we talked about when we talked about the behavior charts, too, is like, okay, you're imposing expectations, but does everybody understand? How confusing is it? Because the different situations, there are very different expectations.
Right. I always look at a child who wipes their mouth with their arm sleeve and thinking, I've got to get it off because somebody told me that's not a polite thing to do. And then they get in trouble because they wiped it with their sleeve. And I'm thinking, okay, wait a minute. Yeah. You just told the child to keep their mouth clean. So he or she did that. I'm always saying that manners isn't something you teach. It's something that's modeled. And so I'm looking for the positive models out there, and they're hard to find sometimes. But I'm really not sure that buying a book on a bears that say please and thank you is probably the best way to teach manners in terms of that process. Matter of fact, I'm often saying if you see a bear that says please and thank you, run like hell, because that's not a very good bear in terms of that process. Yeah. You know, Kenneth Horne, Dr. Kenneth Horne said something that has stayed with me a long time. He said that if you really want information to be relevant or learned, it has to be real, which I think is an important component, which means it has to be something that is concrete, has to be relevant, something that the child would be interested in learning, interested in attaining, and then it has to be hooked to an emotion, which I find absolutely fascinating, because essentially what he's saying is that the emotional part, you'd have to be pretty excited about it. You'd have to like it to want to keep learning or relearning it. So that real relevant and hooked to an emotion is what he says it needs to occur, all three of them, if you really want learning to take place. That's what I think that we've seemed to forgotten in terms of the process of children learning, don't you, in terms of that?
Oh, definitely. And, you know, it's one of many reasons why we as a family decided to homeschool was, you know, because we noticed some of the things that were happening in the public school systems. Not to say that there aren't, you know, some great things happening there too, but it was one of the reasons why we opted to homeschool, because we wanted to be able to incorporate things that on a more individual scale, which is really difficult to do in a large classroom with one teacher, to really make things real relevant and hooked to an emotion for 30 children. I don't know if I could do that. So
it would be difficult, but I keep thinking, you know, if we're going to talk about apples, then we better have apples around us.
Right.
You know, if we're going to talk about the concept of seeds, then it would be important for us to plant them, to really understand them, and then get really excited when something grows or doesn't grow in terms of that process. And even when you have 25 to 28 kids, there is some way that can happen. And in most cases, we've just decided that it's easier to do the paper and pencil task rather than what's a real, relevant, and hooked to an emotion task that Kenneth Horne. And I'm thinking that this is probably appropriate for all ages. Even when I was at the college, I found that students learn better if they were able to put it and hook it to an emotion and have the real experiences for them in terms of that process. So I'm thinking that this is probably appropriate for all ages. Wouldn't you think so?
Definitely. And, you know, I think about my college experience and of course, by the time you get to college, you're kind of, you know, you're set on what you, most of the time, you're kind of set on what you want to do. Although I changed my mind about what I was going to do a number of times, but having the real and relevant experiences and, you know, something that I really wanted to do, you pick what interests you and you specialize more in that direction. And, you know, I think having opportunities for children to figure out what kinds of things that they really enjoy and they really want to do that are real and relevant are going to help them make those types of decisions later as well.
Yeah. The other thing that David Elkind indicated in his book, Hurry Child, said that information will be pruned within 5 minutes if it isn't real relevant. So I keep thinking about the information that we talked about, calendar, shapes, colors, numbers, manners, and that most of that stuff will be pruned within 5 minutes if it can't be applied immediately and then reapplied in terms of the components. So I can understand how much of the information that you and I talked about that we've lost is because we pruned it because we weren't able to apply it, and it wasn't applicable for most of our ages.
That it makes a lot of sense, but I'm a little stunned by that. You know, when you talk about the amount of time that is wasted on things and then the fact that it's less than 5 minutes, it makes sense now because, you know, when you're trying to like teach somebody to do something and they don't want to be taught it, and then you go back to review it and you're like, what do you mean? We just did this. And it's, right. You know, and it's gone because they proved it.
Well, fourth and fifth grade, we had to memorize the states and the capitals. I don't know them all today. I don't really care to know them either. But when I go visit a state, I might look up the capital to see if I'm anywhere near it because it's more real then.
Right.
So there's just a lot of information that is pruned. Well, we're at that finished time of the discussion for what's relevant, what's not relevant. It's really important to take a look at, because we really don't want to waste children's time. They've got lots of other things they need to do. If you want children to learn, we really need to take a look at what Kenneth Horne does say about real, relevant, and hook to an emotion. Thanks so much for letting us shake some bones. If you have questions or want continued discussion, email me at dkj5075@aol.com or Amy at...
You can email me at amyahola@hotmail.com or you can find me on Facebook at Child Central Station.
Thanks so much for listening.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
This has been Shaking Bones. Dan and Amy will be back next week for more bone rattling. Stay tuned.
Hey, you want to support all the Upstairs Studio podcasts? It's as simple as this. Use our Amazon link when you shop Amazon. We get a small percentage of what you spend. You don't pay any extra. You get your stuff from Amazon. Everybody wins. Where do you find the link? Well, it's on the Explorations Early Learning app. You can find it on the Explorations Early Learning website. And if you don't find it in those places, just get a hold of Jeff on Facebook or via email, and he'll hand deliver it to your inbox. Thanks for your support. Bye-bye.